So Mage's second major discovery was there are people, there are lots of people around who know how to do this. The wisdom of teams is wrong. There are people who know how to make this kind of thing happen. And the scale of the impact of these teams is really, to me, quite amazing. I hadn't grasped this until really very, very recently. I mean, if you ever read the Wisdom of Teams, you may recognize this chart, and that which, a famous chart, and it has this productivity curve where you have work groups, which, as they try to become teams, they get really pseudo teams, but then they get their act together, they start to form, and then they perform and they become real teams. And if you look at the proportions on this graph, the teams, real teams, are presented as being twice as productive as work groups. And I think that's fairly reasonable. It also suggests that high performance teams, when they happen on the chart, 40% more productive than regular teams. Now, the teams that I'm talking about, the teams that Jeff Sutherland has been generating, are huge multiples of that. You can't fit them on this chart. You need a huge book, a huge size page in order to do that. So if you scale down the Wisdom of Teams chart, these teams that Jeff Sutherland, I mean, they're way off the chart. They are not 40%, they're 200%, 400%, 500%, 1,000%. And you even have this extreme case, which was 5,000%, incredible performance of team. There's huge differences in productivity. So this is not like a sort of, well, these things are a little bit better. These things are hugely better, hugely better. This was a staggering thing that I just hadn't grasped. But they're not just that they're marginal changes. We're talking about scale changes. And other thing is that they typically don't die of natural causes. When these teams in regular organizations don't seem to live too long, and the general reaction from management seems to be, well, that's a pity. The team died. It was going great for a while, but it died. Well, these things are fragile. Too bad. It died of natural causes. They don't have a high life expectancy. But my suggestion, sort of conclusion, is that they don't die of natural causes. Basically, they were murdered. they were murdered by the management. And the death certificate is wrong. It's not death by natural causes. It's death by murder or manslaughter. And the management does it. We do this to these teams in a number of ways. We kill them. We fail to remove impediments. Things that might seem little things to us might be the thing that's really slowing the team down. So paying attention to impediments is a hugely important thing. Toyota, it doesn't encourage people to make suggestions and identify problems. It requires people to identify problems. If you don't identify problems in Toyota, that you are a problem employee. You don't fit in Toyota. This is not just about encouraging. This is requiring people to identify impediments. Well, they kill them by accident. What you find a lot of cases is that the team, it gets broken up. The management says, well, that team is so fabulous. Why don't we split those five people and put them in five other teams? And then you're back to where you were again. They do it by accident. They don't realize what they're doing. Or they kill them systematically because these teams tend to stand out. They make everyone else look bad. I mean, imagine if you're a team that's 10 times more productive than any other team. You can imagine the tensions that might be present. This team must be doing something wrong. And they tend to be brought into line and not doing things the way this organization functions. We have to get back to the way we're doing that. And this is about doing things in a new way. I mean, one metaphor would be if you play Mozart string quartets and you proceed in this fashion, I mean, you'll get a rather predictable performance. If you start to do things differently, you might get something that delights us, something radically different. This is about breaking the rules. And when you break the rules in the 20th century organization, you run into problems. And probably the main way that management kills them is by telling them what to do. The management starts giving instructions. You've got to do it this way, you've got to do it that way. When the members of the team know more about the work than the management. So management kills the high performers by telling them what to do. And also by interrupting them with new priorities. Something has come up, drop that, do this, now you try that, those kinds of things. The group team cannot focus on their work because they're groping, trying to grapple with these different priorities. What's interesting about these teams is that not just that they are highly productive, they also, people have shining eyes. When you talk to people in these teams that have been successful, it's the kind of comment you hear a lot, I can't tell you how exhilarating I feel. This is an incredible experience. And it's these are not people who are being whipped along or flogged in order to do this. These are people who are enjoying doing it and typically not working long hours, the reasonable working hours. And here's an example from the Obama campaign team interview from on November 4th with the campaign team, a team that by any measure had high performance, astounded people with their performance. And so they asked the team what it was like to be in that team. And this is what they said.
You ran an incredibly effective and disciplined campaign. It's certainly one of the most effective presidential campaigns that's ever been run. There was no infighting, no real leaks, almost no turnover. How did you manage that? Even the Republicans were in awe.
Well, it's not just his motto was no drama. That doesn't mean that we don't express opinions strongly.
We believed in him, and we believed in the cause, and we believed in each other. And by the end of this thing, over 2 years, you forge relationships, and we're like a family. I mean, the hardest thing about this is that it's ended now. I've said it's like the end of the movie MASH. You know, the war's over, we're all going home, and we want to go home. But on the other hand, it's sort of a bit of melancholy because we've come to love each other and believe in each other, and we know that this will never be the same. We went through this experience, it was a singular experience, and it will never be the same.
That kind of way of talking about teams is the kind of thing that you hear. Words like love tumble out of people's lips in the most natural kind of way. This, we are a family. This is very different. We don't want this to end. It's that kind of feeling is what we're talking about and what we'll be working on the rest of the day, and for those of you who join us tomorrow, is how do we create that feeling? How do we create, in a group, how do we create that respect, a deep respect, that feeling of family, a feeling of love, that we really can then move into a different place and create this in the workplace, create this in the home, create this in communities, colleges, in churches. How can we do this? So we'll be hearing a number of us talking about different kinds of experiences where this emerged, and we'll be learning about your experiences, and we're putting this together, and by the end of the day, we want you to become warriors in this movement to change the world, using storytelling to change the world. Change your world, start in a little way, but over time, change the whole world.